maybe I don't need introductions. I've been working with almost 99% of the. Oh, my name is Pinky Mnube from Gauteng.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael Zavalius, and I'm from the Western Cape.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lydia Mshodi. I'm coming from the Free State Province. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning to yourself and good morning to Honorable Members. I'm Peri Padiachi, Acting DG, and we'll go down on my right and we'll come back to the colleagues behind us.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Gugunde Vele, DDG Social Mobilization and Support Services, DDE.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Vivian Carlton. I'm the DDG responsible for strategy, research and communication.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Yogesh Bana, Deputy Director, Strategic Planning and Reporting.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nzita Moleleko. I'm the CFO in the department.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Matanzi Mamweli, Acting DDG for Curriculum Policy Monitoring and Support.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I'm Anton Skuman, DDG for Administration.
Good morning, Chair, Members. I'm Mr. Sundambo, responsible for provincial members.
I tried to raise my voice, and I'm going to request everybody to make use of his or her rally voice. If you, so that you can, the gentleman at the back and the lady, can you use the mic just for you to be audible enough?
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Tim
Lambo, responsible for provincial monitoring.
Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, I'm Mamela Fuzile from Provincial Monitoring.
No, this is my meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, DG. My name is Firwan Mahadali, as well in the DG's office. Thank you.
If you don't introduce yourself, I'll request you to excuse us.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Diana. I'm from Parliamentary Monitoring Group. Thank you.
Those members who are early, can you introduce yourself?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Morning. My name is Willem Faber, and I arrived exactly at 10 o'clock, and I'm from the Northern Cape.
I arrived at 9:30. I'm from the Limpopo, Thabo Mokonyane.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Temba Mteto, seconded advisor for the committee.
Thank you. Honorable members, like I've indicated, today we are just going to get a briefing. Is there any apologies?
One apology from Honorable Jasmine. We've also received an apology from the department, from the minister and the deputy minister. They are attending UNESCO, so we have 10 apologies which have been submitted.
Can I allow the whip of this committee? The whip. She said that is saying the whip of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for being late. I was looking for the venue. My name is Mamna Juan Rand from Eastern Cape. They call me Zuki.
you, Comrade. Thank you, Honorable Rancho. I find it very strange that on our last meeting that the members looking for the venue. On that note, just a lighter note, can I hand over to the DG, to acting DDG, for the department to give us a briefing on the annual report, 2012-12 annual report.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We're going to make the presentation on the annual report for 2012-13 for the Department of Basic Education. There are three parts, but in terms of part A, which looks at service delivery and the context, and the part B, the program performance, Ms. Carlson will make the presentation, and then on the annual financial statements, the CFO will complete the presentation. So we should take approximately 30 minutes in total. We'll try to go through it without leaving the important parts, and then members, the honourable members want to raise any questions on the slides we may have just gone past, we will welcome them. So I'll hand over to Ms. Carlson.
Thank you, DJ. Honourable Chair, the DJ has already outlined the three parts of this particular presentation. To focus on part A, I also just want to point out that there are a number of slides that we will not necessarily speak to, but that they would be part of our responses should there be more detailed questions posed around them, and the various DDGs would be able to respond to those particular questions. Also just to focus on the elements that we would like to emphasize, there are a number of detailed statistics that obviously support the various aspects of performance information, which we will come to should there be further queries. So we will try to go as speedily through the presentation as possible, but we will obviously pause and return to those slides that require further detailed responses from the members of the department. Section A deals with the overview of the service delivery environment and context, and in this we would like to just emphasize and re-emphasize the issue of the national legislative mandate which supports the work that we do as a department, the NEPA of 1996 which inscribes into law all of the various policies, the monitoring responsibilities, etc. of the Minister of Education, as well as our formal relations between ourselves as a national department and the various provincial authorities. Our statutory role, as listed there, is to formulate policy, norms and standards, and to monitor and evaluate our policy implementation and the impact thereof across the country. In terms of the overview of our service delivery environment and the context, there have been key systemic improvements during the period under review. We've seen improved learner performance in the NSC and in the ANNIS. We've also seen the institutionalization of CAPS within the schooling system, delivery of the first CD schools in terms of the rollout plan, the expanded coverage of the workbook distribution, as well as improved LTSM provisioning in the sector. We've also seen growth within the ECD services, and later on in the presentation, a lot of that detail will be revealed in terms of the growth path over the period under review, and as well as in this particular administration. We've seen strengthened collaboration with our teacher unions in regard to teacher development, as well as the very significant expansion of the care and support program for learners in terms of the expansion of the National School Nutrition Program, the low-fee schools program, as well as health screening. One of our best highlights during this period is the growth in access to education, where we've come close to near universal coverage. I'd like to go to sector performance in terms of the NSC performance. To compare the November 2012 NSC and the supplementary, or to look at those two areas together, we see a significant growth in our estimation in terms of the work across the provinces. Sorry, Chair, is there a problem?
Sorry, Ms.
Page 6.
Okay.
Slide 6.
Maybe I don't have it.
To NSC, the National Senior Certificate Examination. In terms of the November 2012 exam combined with the November, with the supplementary examination, our performance is at 75.6%, as has been well advertised in our in the various public releases, media releases. Our fixed performance on slide 7, would you can track that across from 2008 to 2012. You will see there the marked, the steady increase in the performance of our NSC learners. And when we will skip the next slide in terms of the detailed provincial performance. That can, I think I just wanted to go back to the slide 6 where you can see that a particular area of concern, which was Limpopo in terms of its preparation, actually showed the difference in terms of a performance improvement of 3.9%. We'll skip the next few slides. In terms of the admission to bachelor studies, you also see that we've improved and learners have, we've seen a 26.6 performance in terms of learners that have achieved admission to bachelor studies. Just to focus on slide 10, we will not go into the detail there, but certainly the numbers that have achieved and the various increases across the areas of performance in terms of admission to higher certificate studies from 88,604 to 98,256. Which shows an increase of 9,652 candidates, and the rest I think would be are listed there for your further information. Just in terms of the average percentage mark in maths by grade and by poverty quintile, we can also there track in terms of our quintile 1, quintile 2, 3, 4 and 5, the various performances in terms of the various grades. From 1 to 9, here we are looking particularly at our performance in terms of ANNAs. It will be dealt with in greater detail when we come to indicators. We'd also just like to focus on our ECD improvement in terms of the percentage of 7 to 15-year-old children attending an educational institution taken from the General Household Survey. We would see there that our coverage here is at 98.8%, which is as close to universal access as we can demonstrate. In terms of the ECD percentage of 5-year-old children attending an educational institution, from 2002 to 2011, also 84.8%, ranging from the details taken independently from the General Household Survey.
and our own calculations come back. In terms of the lack of books as a problem which is experienced at schools, we've seen a general decline in that being experienced as a problem, and there's been a steady decline in this slide you can see on slide 16. Steadily over time we've seen from 2002 to 2011 it's come down from 20.5 to 6. And that I think shows a significant commitment on our part to ensuring that there be a decline in this particular area of work. The detailed performance information I think later will also demonstrate more detail of that fact. The concerns which have been expressed about schooling have also been declining in the 2008 to 2011 period. Again, the stats come from the General Household Survey and Stats South Africa. Must I speak louder?
No. Well, honourable members, we are checking when the presenter is on the floor. This is what I've been asking. Can you give the attendance to the present?
Thank you. I think on slide 17, we just want to demonstrate there as well that in terms of the lack of books, fees being too high, or facilities being in a bad condition, classes being too large, and a lack of teachers with poor teaching. However, these things have remained in the media and in terms of public concern and our own concerns. We want to demonstrate from 2002 to 2011 the steady decline in those concerns being expressed. We also use, as an independent source of this information, the analysis that we receive from GCIS, and which also then quite clearly demonstrates how those public concerns have been expressed in very different forms. And there's a very detailed analysis which GCIS has provided us with to indicate exactly how those concerns have been expressed and in which instances they've supported us, either in a neutral sense, where comments have been made, but where information has been provided to support the efforts of the DBE. And I want to go to part B to deal with program performance. And here, I think in terms of the programs of the DBE, just to indicate that in terms of our annual performance plan, the priorities of the DBE have been captured and aligned to our delivery agreement in support of outcome one of government, which is to improve the quality of basic education, as well as the action plan to 2014 towards the realization of schooling 2025. Our activities at DBE are captured in five programs as listed there, and which is elaborated upon in the APP, which is Program 1, Administration, Program 2, Curriculum Policy, Support and Monitoring, Program 3, Teachers, Education, Human Resources and Institutional Development, Program 4, Planning, Information and Assessment, and Program 5, Educational Enrichment Services. I'm going to skip over the next slide because I think it also demonstrates there our achievement of targets. Some of them in terms of the quarterly targets, the biannual targets and annual targets are listed there, and the total number of program performance indicators at 51. To go straight into program one, administration, I identify here that the purpose of this particular program is to manage the department in terms of the branch administration and to provide strategic and admin support services, as in captured in branch R, as we know it, which is strategy, research, and communication. That second branch also captures the international relations or coordinates international relations performance and programs of the department. Our highlights and achievements in this particular program one, we just want to list there that two key posts of DDG and seven SMS posts were filled during the period under review, and this has significantly also assisted in alleviating our capacity constraints. Capacity was also developed through our workplace skills plan and the various personal development plans of the officials. Our efforts to establish accountability and performance-based reporting and management in the DBE culminated in our finalization of our performance assessments of all the officials by the end of the financial year. The quality of our genetic management practices in the DBE was also assessed by using the impact tool, which I'm sure members are familiar with. This assessment would determine the current level of performance of the DBE, and it also assists us in pinpointing those areas which are in need of improvement and which are also currently being addressed, as we will demonstrate later in the presentation. The DBE also finalized the quarterly system monitoring tool, which is the school and for school and district planning, the management and monitoring tools, and we've also secured approval for these instruments being utilized at our HEDCOM and CEM level. Our school and district planning management and monitoring tools serve as a guideline, and these were developed in accordance with our school and district reporting requirements as a basis for us being able to report accurately on a quarterly basis, as well as to assist our schools and districts with their accountability measures. To highlight on slide 23, further achievement partnerships with our various institutions also form part of our efforts to engage and lay the basis for our support with our strategic stakeholders across the world. In this period, the department negotiated a cooperation agreement with the Ministry of Education of China, and the agreement focused on key national priorities around further education, peace and security and health, and it was signed during the state visit by the new president of China on the 26th of March 2013, just before the end of this annual period under discussion today. The department also negotiated a second cooperation agreement between the South African government and the UK, and this regards the teaching of English in schools. The declaration of intent will be formally signed in this current period, and which we will obviously report on at the end of this financial cycle. In terms of the outputs on slide 24, our performance indicators here also show that in all the instances listed on this slide, as in the number of officials who participated in staff development activities, the number of internships, and the percentage of employment outcomes of these interns, all demonstrated a positive variance. And you can look at the detail of that under the actual output for 2012 and 2013. In terms of the reports that we were supposed to submit for the year, both reports were completed, compiled and submitted to our various structures for further reference. This report deals with our participation in our multilateral bodies, as well as our international affairs and activities of the DBE. In terms of slide 25, again, those legal cases and the reports thereof have been compiled. Four in the instance of the report on legal cases instituted against the basic education sector, as well as the report on legal cases by type and province. Those are all listed there and can be detailed in further discussion. To go straight to program two, the purpose of this program is to develop curriculum and assessment policies and to monitor and to support its implementation. In terms of the curriculum and assessment policy statement, this implementation of CAPS is on track with us having implemented the intermediate phase, grade 4 to 6, and grade 11, which commenced in the 2013 academic year. Preparation for the next academic year in grade 12 and senior phase in 2014 are already at an advanced stage. We want to indicate that the grade 12 CAPS orientation was conducted in all the provinces according to the schedule listed there. And the senior phase CAPS orientation program for all provinces started from the 8th of March already and ran until the 24th of May. So it was well in advance of the actual implementation, and educators have been geared towards their preparation and planning for its implementation. I'm sure that Mr. Murley will be able to speak in greater detail to that at a later stage in the meeting. The training on the certificate in primary education language teaching to support the English first additional language was conducted in August 2012, and the Ministerial Task Team Audit of Reading Programs also finalized its report in February 2013 already. This report highlighted areas for concerted and immediate action, especially with respect to teaching children to read and the practice of reading in schools across the country. This combined with the EDU report shows that the provincial efforts in implementing reading interventions should be more closely strengthened and supported. On slide 29, we also, one of the highlights of the achievements also is the impact evaluation which we undertook in terms of the reception grade, and it's all the preliminary findings and the effects on the school-based reception provision were very, very beneficial, and also quality improvements are essential to ensure that we have sustainable benefits in the longer term. There was also a diagnostic review of the ECD, which was finalized together with an implementation plan, and this will also guide implementation for not only the DBE, but also for the Department of Social Development. Another significant highlight was the adaptation of the workbooks for Braille for grades 7 to 9, and this was completed together with a teacher, with teacher guidelines for sign language, as well as augmentative and alternative communication, which was developed in support of this. The HRD strategy also for inclusive education was approved in 2012, and this was made available to our provinces as well as to higher education institutions to support the further professional development of educators in this category. DBE also developed and released the basic education sector plan for the procurement and delivery of LTSM in provinces during this period. And further, the national guidelines for school, library and information services were launched on the 12th of August, or the 13th of August in 2012, and this helps to support the consolidation of the culture of reading in schools. In terms of program two outputs, with specific reference to the indicators listed there, three of those demonstrate a positive variance, as well as in terms of the new e-education strategy that we'll be updating the white paper. The new draft strategy has been developed, but as yet it's not been fully approved due to various concerns around the implementation, and this is being and a team has been established to attend to this matter. Further outputs on slide 33, we can also demonstrate here that a number of for the number of personnel change in multi-grade teaching per province, that the target was achieved in terms of the percentage of grade 3 learners performing at the required literacy level. Also, in this case, a positive variance has been achieved. The percentage of grade 3 learners performing at the required numeracy level, the target there was set at 55%. In the 2012 annual, 36% of learners achieved above 50%, and this is also an increase on the 2011 annual performance. However, the other concerns are currently being addressed as we go along. The percentage of grade 5 learners performing at the required language level, the target was set at 51%. There is, however, an increase in the on the 2012 annual performance of 15%, which also demonstrates that attention has been paid to this particular area. In terms of the performance indicators on slide 34, I just want to highlight here that the percentage of grade 6 learners performing at the required math level was the target set at 44%. And only 11% of learners achieved above 50%. And this is a matter which will also be shown up in other parts of the report in terms of the work that's been done and in terms of the work for this current period, and will be demonstrated in other opportunities that we will have to do so. So we're going to the other outputs on program two on slide 36. The performance indicators there, in 2012, a total of 136,047 grade 12 learners became eligible for admission into university. 15,280 more bachelor passes were achieved in 2012 than in 2011. And this demonstrates that the sector is clearly on track in terms of achieving its target for 32% of grade 12 learners, graduates able to be admitted for bachelor degree study. The trend year in this indicator moved from 19.9% in 2008 to 24.3% in 2011 and to 26% in 2012. On the next slide, here in terms of the number of grade 12 learners passing math, the number of passes in math for 2012 was 121,970. This is 17, almost 18,000 more than the 2011 throughput rate. The pass rate for math was 54% in 2012, and this shows an improvement of 46.3% on the 2011 results. The number of grade 12 learners passing physical science. Here, the number of passes in physical science was 109,918 in 2012. Also demonstrating that the pass rate was an improvement on the 2011 pass rate of 53.4%. The percentage of learners who obtained a national senior certificate, the target was set at 70%, and as we know, this was combined with the supplementary exams, the pass rate increased to 75.6%. We are all familiar with the pass rate as announced in January 2012, in January 2013, which was 73.9%. Later combined with some supplementary exams, amounts to 75.6%. The percentage of learners with a textbook for each subject, the target was set at 85%. It can be reported that 99.4% of grades 4 to 6 and grade 11 orders were delivered to schools for utilization by learners. Also, in terms of the number of learners who received workbooks, the target was set at 10.3 million, and we were able to distribute 10.9, close to 11 million learners. In terms of program two around Kari Gude, the performance indicator here was the target was 630,990 learners being enrolled. The predetermined target was definitely achieved and exceeded because we recorded 665,000 learners on the Kari Gude database. The percentage who completed the Kari Gude program, the target was set at 83%, and 93% in this period was recorded as having graduated from the Kari Gude program, also demonstrating a positive variance. On the next slide as well, in terms of the number of district officers having trained officials in the screening, identification, assessment and support strategies, also a positive variance of the number of district officers that had trained in the SEER strategy. Likewise, in the next indicator, which is the number of schools which are trained in SEER, a positive variance of 111 has been achieved. I think I should move on to program three at this point. I just want to check on time. Okay. I want to move with relative speed then to program three. This is one for our teachers, our teachers branch, looking at education, human resources and institutional development. Highlights here, in order to maintain stability in our schools and supportive curriculum and learner performance, this became a critical focus of the HR planning strategy, and a National Education Human Resource Framework was developed and approved. This framework, as listed there, contains interventions which will allow us to place educators additional to the first establishment to improve the absorption and deployment of Funza Lushaka bursars and to effect the translation of temporary educators to permanent staff where appropriate. Proper implementation also of the IQMS system also supports effective teaching but also helps to improve the levels of accountability. during this period, a total of 13,527 school visits were conducted by the IQMS moderators. Likewise, also under our highlights, the teacher centres have become a key focus of our work of this branch. A survey of teacher centres was completed in this period, and it yielded information on how the 112 centres in the country could assist in playing a more active role in supporting educators. And linked to this was the development of norms and standards for teacher centres, which should assist in ensuring uniformity across the various teacher centres in the country, because we've seen quite a variety of roles that they've played. This will hopefully attend to a standardisation of the services that they could render. In terms of teacher union collaboration, the objective of the MOA with teacher unions is to facilitate the achievement of the professional development targets as we set out in the action plan. And this involves the collaboration, the evaluation of plans which have been developed by the unions, and allocations then made to the unions totaling 70 million to commence the various teacher development programs in support of our own efforts as a department. A further highlight under Program C is the Funza Lushaka Bursary scheme was allocated an increased amount as listed there. And in 2012-2013, the number of bursaries awarded increased to 11,715. This year also saw the introduction of district-based recruitment programs, which targeted our learners from rural and poor communities in the various quintiles identified there. Also, a policy on the organization roles and responsibilities of education districts was gazetted, and through this policy, districts have been provided with the necessary roles, delegated authority, functions, resources, and skills to enable them and to support them in performing their core functions. In terms of the performance indicators here, on the those listed on slide 47, a positive variance can be demonstrated. Likewise, on the next slide, the percentage of ordinary public schools where the SGBs will meet the minimum criteria in terms of effectiveness. 71% and 11% increase on the target that was set can be shown. The percentage of schools, principals rating the support services of districts as being satisfactory was set at 50%. Now, data to report on this particular one is unavailable at the moment, and the instrument to measure principal rating of services was not fully administered. Program 4, which deals with planning, information, and assessment. The purpose here is to promote quality and effective service delivery in the system through our planning, information, and assessment system. The highlights here, our results were processed and released to candidates in January. Four different reports were produced to adequately consolidate all of the data that we could glean from this process. This was then presented to the PEDs and the various stakeholders in education and the media as well. And the diagnostic report, which looks at learner performance in detail, highlighted those areas of weakness which needed to be attended to, and also provided suggestions for how those improvements in teaching and learning could be undertaken. Another significant area of work is the learner unit record information and tracking system known as LURIT, which aims to collect all the record data for every learner in the country from grade R right through to grade 12, and a total of 20,564 schools and 8.9 million learners were successfully uploaded to LURIT at March 2013, and steady improvements during this report, during the next reporting period, will also be able to be demonstrated in terms of how that has become more evident. The annual national assessments were administered from 18 to 21 September in 2012 to all grade 1 to 6 and grade 9 learners in public and state-funded independent schools. And a total of 90 DBE officials, which included IQMS monitors, were deployed to the various provinces to monitor the implementation of these tests. And obviously the diagnostic report on the ANDA results was subsequently developed, and the purpose of that report would be to enable the various levels of education to attend to the areas of remediation. In Program 4, further highlight was the progress of replacing inappropriate schools, and I think there have been a number of reports and presentations to both the Portfolio Committee and Select Committee on the work of ACD. So I'm not going to go into the detail. All of that would be listed on slide 52. But just to say that the inappropriate structures would cover those which were viewed as either temporary or as mud schools, the plunky schools, the corrugated sheeting structures and prefab schools, which are no longer fit for purpose. And these new schools within their CD program, which adhere to the guidelines relating to public, to planning for public school infrastructure as far as practically possible. The rest of the points I want to deal with at this point. In Program 4 also, we facilitated meetings, regular meetings with all 86 district directors and the senior provincial managers who had the responsibility for district coordination. These were chaired by the minister herself and attended also by senior management of the DBE. They are convened on a quarterly basis to address all of the challenges and to improve best practice in a collegial manner with a lot of peer and peer support often being evident in those particular platforms. During this period also the school calendar was gazetted for 2014, and we also attended to roughly 3,500 inquiries which were received from the presidential hotline. Our success rate is amongst the best in across government departments, and it stands at 80% in this period under review. Approximately 600 pieces of correspondence also from the general public, parents and teachers, have also been processed in this time. Other highlights included the 94-plus project for Madiba, which targeted particular schools, and this then rendered, they received support which approximates 40 million rand from a total of 22 partners and 7 other national departments. Also during this period, NEDU met its targets, namely by evaluating 134 schools and 15 district offices. The NEDU report captured all of the details and their recommendations in their various findings. Outputs here that deal with the targets have been indicated and achieved. The DBE produced 680 different exemplars in maths and language for grades 1 to 6 and grade 9, and these exemplars as well as other ANDA support materials were distributed to schools by the various provinces. I'm not going to go into the detail of the papers listed there, but NSC exemplars were developed in 8 subjects in grades 10, where CAPS will be implemented for the first time in 2012. In terms of the indicator for national technical report on learner performance in grade 12 being released, the exam was successfully conducted, and a total number of 511,000 learners wrote the NSC. The National Technical Report on Learner Performance was also compiled, and as I listed earlier, this pointed to various weaknesses which needed to be addressed. The percentage of schools complying with a very basic level of school infrastructure, the latest available data, the target was set at 92%. The latest available data for this indicator is 55% on the school monitoring survey of 2011. A point I failed to make earlier also was that a lot of the information in this report obviously deals with the period under review ending March 2012, but we've already presented in our first quarter report on the 2013 year improvements in many of the areas that we've listed here. So it'll be useful for comparative purposes in terms of the dated information you might have in the annual reporting period. I want to go straight to Program 5, Educational Enrichment Services. In support of promoting the overall well-being of learners, the Integrated School Health Program was launched in October, and in addition, also a total of 16, almost 17,000 allo educators were trained and in excess of 1.2 million sets of LTSM were distributed to schools dealing with sexual and reproductive health. The geographic information systems maps, which also points to health, education and poverty indicators for the 9 provinces, were also developed to assist with health interventions where most needed. Workshops were conducted with provinces and by provinces to focus on how to improve on the NSNP implementation, food production and financial management. And one of our key success stories also is around the social cohesion work done by this branch in terms of a toolkit in selected schools and districts where there was a phase in implementation of this toolkit. The DBE also organized national rounds of the Thule Young Historians Competition, the school's moot court competition, and the South African school's Coral Heights Tedford, which during our education budget, those I'm sure you would have witnessed some of those DVDs that have been produced about the excellent events that these have been. Our social cohesion programs are targeted at countering some of the social ills that plague our schools, and I think that there's huge take-up of these events as they are presented in the calendar, in the school calendar by schools across the province. To respond to the call made in the NDP for intersectoral cooperation on how to improve our various educational outcomes, the DBE put in place an education collaboration framework, which is seen as a multi-stakeholder dialogue, which was convened first in December 2012, and which has also rolled out further in this current reporting period, and more detail of that obviously will be provided at the tail at the end of that. But the ECF during this period under review was seen as a necessary process to implement targeted programs and to also include district and systemic change and interventions in support of such innovation. The outputs here on slide 65 also indicate a positive variance, as well as looking at the number of participation of schools participating in those events that I've raised in my previous comment. I will now want to focus maybe just on some of the challenges that we've identified during the auditing process, just to draw your attention to the details listed there on this on slide 67 and 68. I won't read the exact detail of all of that. You would probably be able to come back to that in your questions. But just to point to slide 69, which speaks to those concerns and challenges which we encountered during the auditing process, in which we've undertaken a very rigorous capacity building for officials in the branches in terms of planning, reporting, and the monitoring and evaluation, as well as to support branches in their individual areas of operational planning. And this is supported by customized templates so that we have a uniform approach across branches, as, and these templates are used on a quarterly basis for reporting, so that that speaks directly to the planning as they've been captured in the APPs and operational plans. We've also looked at data verification and supported by our internal audit unit and M&E directors. The rest of it are captured on page on slide 69. I'm now going to pause here and hand over to the CFO to give us some opportunity to complete the financials. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Members. In terms of slide 71, the slide reflects the amount that was allocated to the department and the actual expenditure thereof. And as we can see, most programs spent 95% and above of the allocated budget. Only program 4 spent below 95%. And on the next slide is the allocation per economic classification. And this one also reflects the amounts allocated as well as the expenditure and the amount in the deviation column and the percentage spent there. And in terms of percentages, the one that is the lowest there is buildings and other fixed structures, and this falls under Program 4. The following slides are giving explanations for under expenditure in the various areas. in the department. Now, the first one is Program 1 Administration, which underspent by 5.557 million. The reason for underspending on this one, in fact, part of it is not underspending, it's actually a saving with regard to office accommodation budget. Now, this one, we are given a specific allocation, but it increases every year with CPI. Now, the CPI, as we know, it fluctuates. So sometimes maybe the amount that we're given is slightly higher. So what we spend there was less because of the CPI that was charged for the particular year. There were also vacancies in that branch which were filled in the latter part of the financial year, but they, because of the time at which they were filled, there was an amount there that was not spent. The next slide is under deviation for Program 2. The reason for underspending is mainly due to delays in procurement processes of the LTSM in respect of Karagude mass literacy. But we must remember that although there was a delay, the classes normally start around June and July. So we normally procure the material earlier to ensure that when the classes start, the material is there. But there was a bit of a delay in the procurement, hence there was under expenditure on this program. With regard to Program 3, there was underspending of 43 million there, and the reason for underspending is mainly due to moderators that are appointed in respect of the IQMS project. They are appointed on contract. Now, due to resignations of moderators, when they find permanent employment, results in compensation on this project not being fully utilized. And the budget approval for teacher training collaboration with teacher unions was only received during October 2012. Now, on this one, there is a collaboration with unions to train teachers, but there is no budget for this. What it's funded through savings within the department. Now, the area where savings were identified, it was an earmarked fund, so the department had to get approval from National Treasury to utilize those savings. So approval was only received in October, but it was exam time, as we know that exams start in October and November is exams. So training could only take place at the end of the financial year, which is the beginning of the new academic year. Now, some of the invoices for the training were received very late in the financial year, and some of the training overlapped into the new financial year. Therefore, there was underspending on this project. And then for Program 4, there was underspending on the EIG grant of 20 million rand. But this one was due to provinces were given, when they are given their grant, there's 10 million that is set aside for appointment of an environmental specialist in each province. Now, two provinces, which are KZN and Northern Cape, they did not appoint this environmental specialist, so their transfer was not made for just this portion of the grant. And then for the school infrastructure backlog indirect grant, there was an underspending on this project of 1.2 billion rand. And the reasons for that were due to some contractors were cancelled due to non-delivery of or non-performance of the contractors. There were also adverse weather conditions and poor road conditions which contributed to slow delivery on the project. And then with Program 5, the under expenditure on this program is due to funds that were withheld for the HIV and AIDS, Dinner Lady Schools and Technical Schools conditional grants to Limpopo. And this amount was withheld due to low spending in the province. Now, the next slide is the Auditor General report. The department received an unqualified opinion with emphasis of matter, and the reasons for emphasis were material underspending of the budget on Program 4. As I indicated, the underspending there was 1.2 billion, and then there was a restatement of prior year comparative figures for the ACD program. The accruals there were incorrect, so we had to correct them. Hence, it was noted in the Auditor General's report. Thank you.
Thank you. The chairperson will be coming in regularly soon. But I think we can go on to take questions from the members. Questions and comments and so on. Okay.
From the department. The first question I do have here is in connection with the advertisement of teaching posts. You mentioned there were 140 posts and 49% of them were filled and 61% not filled. And I do understand that maybe there were some other problems, especially in connection with the advertisement and teachers or those applicants, they did not maybe qualify or some other issues. Can you just elaborate on that information? And what is the plan to fill the other outstanding vacancies in those posts? And then can you just provide us maybe on a later situation with the information, what is your plan, how you will fill it from now, or did you already start with it? The other one is in connection with the acting allowances of staff members. There are a few of them in acting positions, and then what cost it incurs, especially between the acting person of staff and then those staff on the permanent basis, the difference of cost between them. Because I know they are a different criteria and also payment, salary in due course in that position. And you actually exceed on your target of interns. Are there any consequences on your budget because there are more interns than you planned? Can you just explain to us, my understanding is not maybe correct, the difference between the lead teacher and the subject advisor, and also the role they played and their duties to the education system and classes and schools and so on. My other concern is in connection with libraries and the contract between the department and the REIT. There are a lot of schools with classroom libraries, and then not so many with, actually I call the constitutional libraries. And they must be also some programs inside the Department of Basic Education, how they will automatically plan program, how they plan to outface that classroom library. Because in some schools there is only a classroom with shelves and a few books. I can understand if those classrooms and the shelves are filled with books, and then you can see, you can just decide, right, this is a library, although it is in a classroom. Chairperson, my last question for this round, if I do get next one. There's 70 million rand educated to teaching unions to develop teachers. Now, do you have in the Department of Basic Education a program by yourself constructed or by the teacher unions to train teachers, and in what area do that training consist of from the teacher unions? Because my understanding is maybe some other department or some other institution outside the unions and outside the Department of Education, Basic Education, must be also included there, not only the unions or the universities. Can you just give us some more information on how those unions are actually helping the education department in training the teachers and develop it? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Acting Chair, what was the arrangement? Was that members will get another opportunity?
No, we should not have enough. He was the only one who raised the hands.
No, I'm saying because he said when he gets another bite, was that?
No,
we'll check.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I said if.
If also.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Honorable Father.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Honorable De Villiers already touched on two of my questions, but the one I also want to ask on slide 34. On program 2 on the outputs, it says percentage of grade 6 learners performing as required mathematical levels, 44%. But then the two, and I mean this is a report that we're getting, but then the two underneath that to be determined, percentage of grade 9 learners performing as required language level to be determined. Why is there no, why to be determined? I mean, shouldn't it have an outcome already? We should, I suppose, have an outcome on that. I can't understand why that still has to be determined. And then I would also like to know, because no one is keeping us up to date on DG Bobby Subrain, because I don't see anything on that. On the DG, I would like to know, as I know, as from July, I would like to know, is it suspended, on leave? What is the situation there? Because I know the teachers' union has put pressure on that this has been investigation, but I've seen nothing in the news, so I'd like to know, is he suspended without salary? What is the situation on DG Bobby Subrain? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On slide 63. I think there's something there about Nkosi Albert Rituli, Young Historians Competition. Maybe can I just explain a bit how that works? It's quite interesting. And then the other thing was, say if a school manages to convince somebody to build them a library, does the department now offer library services in that? Because in a library you need a librarian, you need somebody who actually run the library, you need a system to run the library and so on. Does the department give that type of support in that case? And then the issue of not only books but also periodicals and also content for the computer systems that are there. Thank you.
Maybe from this side. I just want to check because according to the report, the department has acknowledged that they're having 6,160 multi-grade schools. And with plus minus 1.5 million learners, so and we only have 846 subject advisors. How do you maybe one would like to know whether does this number of subject advisors really would be able to deal with this kind of, you know, this large multitude of learners and these high numbers of the grade, multi-grade schools? And also, how many multi-grade schools do we have per province, if we can just get that breakdown? And one would be actually interested again to know what is the difference, you know, the roles, the different roles between the lead teachers and your subject advisors.
Over to the department.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Chair, I will start, and then I think the order will be, we'll start with Mr. Mueli, and I'll then indicate. I think, let me just start with the one on the DG, which is not necessarily on the annual report. Basically, the DG is on special leave, and that's with pay. And basically, the minister has appointed a judge to conduct a hearing in which charges will be determined. And that process is basically handled by the minister and the ministry. So as a department, we're not involved in that, and we are focused on, we're continuing with the plan that has, and the mandate that's been given to us. So that's on the DG. And I just then would answer the question on the library for a school, where if a donor comes and delivers, the department encourages that, but obviously when the library is built, there are guidelines for the norm in which how the building should be, that that's usually done through the provincial education department, but they will follow that. At the moment, provinces basically would be the one that would have to provide the support in terms of the materials, as well as the books, as well as any library assistant. But that is not done consistently in the nine provinces. But what DBE is doing in the schools that we are involved in, where we're building, basically we complete the building, plus we look at, we're putting in books. In fact, we're going out to get a framework tender in which we would have a supply of books which we could supply at that time. In fact, the minister has also directed us to look at how we take young graduates or matriculants who have an interest in becoming librarians and offering them a bursary so that we could eventually employ them as school librarians. But that is work in progress. So that's what we're looking at presently, but there's also cooperation with other national departments like arts and culture to assist. And I think Samuel elaborated that the library is just not, there's different types of libraries from the classroom to the center, the main one in the classroom, in the a room in the school, but also to try to link that up with assisting communities as well, where there are no community libraries. So just the colleagues will come in, starting with Mr. Samuel, then Mr. Schumann, and then we'll take Ms. Ndebele, and Ms. Carlson will cover the others which that's applicable to.
Thank you, DG, Chair, and honorable members. I would start with questions that came from honorable De Villiers. I think there's a question shared by the Honourable Chair and Honourable De Villiers of the lead teacher and subject advisors. They asked the same question. And I used to, I mean, I have to use a bit of my experience and knowledge around this. The lead teacher, which we used to call a senior teacher, would be a teacher identified based on experience and knowledge in a particular subject or phase. And that will be recognized, and that teacher previously would even record a document that would show that such a teacher is a senior teacher in the system, who could be used particularly in the absence of a head of the department to take those responsibilities and assist. In the presence of the head of the department, the lead teacher would be a resource in terms of assisting
in a particular department with the development and support of teachers in a particular school. Taking into account that a department is your resident subject advisory services. In other words, the subject advisors are located in a district or in a circuit outside the school. And in the absence of subject advisory services, the expertise of the lead teacher and the head of the department would come in handy to provide support to teachers. So the roles and responsibilities are that the lead teacher's role in the absence of the HOD would be assigned to the lead teacher in a school. But it would even go beyond that, where you experience shortages with your subject advisors. You'd use some of them in your training. Use some of them in your professional forums. Every province and every district would hold in the bi-monthly or quarterly professional forums. You know, a forum for mathematics, a forum for history, a forum for English, and so on. You'd have a lead teacher also assisting there in the absence of an HOD together with the subject advisor. But the role of the subject advisor is very clear. Assign the cluster of schools. Provinces have really moved to ensure that they provide subject advisors per phase. And I must indicate, not all provinces, but I think it would interest this committee that of recent, one of the provinces that moved quite fast in making sure that we move towards the requisite number of subject advisors is the Eastern Cape. It appointed a number of subject advisors last year and linking them to provision per phase. But in some provinces, some would even straddle in between phases. Well, the provision in Free State hasn't been that bad, but the Eastern Cape has been one of those provinces that have been lacking. And I think the Northwest as well. And both provinces have moved in terms of increasing the number of subject advisors. And without taking much time, Chair, so the role of the subject advisor is to provide monitoring and support to schools. So that is the role of the subject advisor. Libraries, I know, DG, that this is a matter of extreme interest. I think even 2 weeks ago or so, there was an article on the Business Day on libraries. I think the DG is right, acting DG is right to say that we have joined the rest of the world. We don't define library services in an old, traditional, and conventional way of a central library services. In other words, the building is standing there and the rest of the school community would now and again move to a building to access services. Library services has evolved and is now defined as central libraries, preferably for your secondary school learners, central libraries. And then you've got classroom libraries. And the classroom libraries you'd have preferably for your primary schools, in other words, your grade R up to about grade 6 to 7 learners, where in every corner of a classroom, you'd have books that are allocated to the class, and then learners would then collect them from the teacher. The teacher becomes the librarian, and that has proven to be working in many countries, especially for primary school learners. In KZN, for instance, they've gone even beyond that. Teachers are loaning books from provincial and local government libraries for learners. And then the learners get these books from the teachers, which is what we are selling to other provinces with the effort of increasing, you know, the reading culture in South Africa. And I'm sure it would interest members to know that South Africans ranked right at the bottom in terms of reading culture. The reason why our learners do not perform well is that their parents are not reading. They are doing something else other than reading. Countries that read, their learners do well. Countries like Russia, countries like Poland and others, citizens read there, and you can see it in the performance of their children. I just thought that it would be important for me just to mention that. And then what program is in place for teacher collaboration? Well, for starters, we thought that CAPS implementation will be the right program to start with. And I am aware that unions, in collaboration with the relevant branch of Mr. Kujan, have also been working on other programs. But what has been implemented so far has been training and orientating teachers around CAPS implementation, which is a program determined by DBE in conjunction with unions, including universities and others who sit in our various structures. We do involve universities. For instance, the training in physical education, we initiated that through universities such as Northwest Potchefstroom Campus University. We've got a very good program there in terms of physical education. So we are involving university. Provinces are also doing that. I am aware that the Northwest Province involved them in terms of dealing with subject content knowledge gaps, particularly around subjects like English as first additional language for grade 10, 11, and 12. So we are involving universities as well, including NGOs. There's one NGO in the Western Cape which specializes in the development programs on multi-grade schools. I think the name, I'm not sure about the name of the NGO, but we are using that NGO, which is located here in the Western Cape, for multi-grade schools. The other question came from Honorable Fivers. Around grade 9, why are we talking about targets still to be determined for grade 9? Grade 9 learners set for ANA for the first time only in 2012. 2013 will be the second year, so we set targets based on the available data and trends, because if you don't do that, then your targets will not be informed. That is the only reason. There wasn't. For other grades we had, there was enough. There was enough data. And then the other question was about what happens when a school acquires a library as a building or a facility, whether it be mobile and so on, whether the department would be able to provide library services. In other words, the content that informs the service, either the materials or even the IT systems and so on. Yes, indeed, provinces have started to budget quite seriously for library services. I must acknowledge first that in the past, library services was viewed as a nice to have. It's for that reason that we are in the situation that we are in now. Until DBE insisted and developed a plan and said every province must budget something towards the provision of library services. It only started, I think, this financial year, and we are hoping to improve it going forward. So when a school acquires by donation a facility or a building, it should be linked to what is provided for in terms of the budget of the provincial department. And I have no doubt in my mind that that assistance would come in handy, because in that instance, the building or the facility would be there. All that you require is to put in the materials, even computers, and even the personnel that would be required. But I must also indicate that librarians are among our scarce skills in the system, which is an issue that we are discussing in the sector to prioritize. Members would know that we're still battling with the priority of math, science, and technology teachers. So librarians are also among the scarce skills that we need to really prioritize. And then the last one, Acting DG from the Honorable Chair, was really around, I think in a way I've made some comments around it, subject advisors vis-a-vis schools, learners, and even particularly multi-grade schools. Maybe the first thing is to also to acknowledge, which the minister has done many times, that multi-grade schools have not received the attention that it was required previously. But for the past 2 years, we have paid attention to multi-grade schools. But you don't have subject advisors that are dedicated for multi-grade schools. I think that acknowledgement must be made. What we are doing currently is to train the current subject advisors to be able to, over and above providing support to monograde schools, to have the capacity and the knowledge to provide support to multi-grade schools. I think that is the approach that the world is taking, given the scarcity around the human resource that we require. But I've indicated how provinces attempted to improve the provision of the number of subject advisors. So we use the same subject advisors that are providing support to monograde schools to assist even in multi-grade schools. Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, Acting DG. I will respond to the two questions also asked by Honorable de Villiers around the acting allowances and the interns. Now, to start with the acting allowances, just to say to Honorable de Villiers, the management and the implementation of acting allowances is very well defined within the Public Service Act and the regulations. So the department cannot really decide do this, but I'll go quickly through it. So it is very well defined. First of all, that senior management members, that now from director and upwards, you can only act for a period of 6 months. The delegation is also with the minister. So if somebody needs to act as a chief director or a DDG, the minister approves that acting period. And it cannot be longer than 6 months. These acting normally takes place when the post is vacant and there's a need for a person then to act in this specific post. For lower level people, deputy director and lower, the delegation is with the director general of the department. That acting period is for a year, not longer for a year. Now what the department tries is normally these acting take place when somebody resigns and the post is in a process to be filled, but you need somebody in that specific post to fulfill financial delegations. Now, what I mean by that is that certain things can only be signed off on certain levels. So if there's not somebody, then you need somebody there. There is a difference in salary, yes. What normally happens, Honorable de Villiers, is that if a person is acting on one level, and acting on the next level, the current salary of the person is taken into account, and the difference of salary to the first notch of the post that is acted in is paid as an allowance and is taxable. I don't have the funds. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you how much the department is spending on that, but that we can give to you. It's no problem, but we'll have to calculate that quickly. The question around the interns, that is a government-wide project, the interns. Now the rationale is to try to train people within the job and make them then employable in the future. Now, the department is one of the leading departments on this. These interns are remunerated from the personnel budget. Your question is, do we overspend? No, we don't. They are also paid, they are normally paid a stipend that is prescribed. It varies a bit between departments, but it is generally managed by the DBSA to see that the departments don't spend much on that. Now, just to give you an idea, a person with a matric, you can employ a person from a matric certificate, then you can employ a person with a normal degree, then an honors degree, master's and doctorate degree, so they prescribe. But they are paid about 2,000 rand a month for the entry level, and a person with a honors degree would earn about 3,500 rand a month.
I think the success of the department is that we have employed quite a number of these interns. Now what we do is we just don't take them. We put the advertisement out, people then apply, and through a sifting process and little recruitment process, they are employed. But most of the interns that has gone through the department have found jobs within the public service. Thank you very much, Honorable.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to respond to the Nkosi Albert Luthuli competition. It's an initiative that we started a few years back, and its primary aim is to encourage young people to have an interest in history and to start researching about their local, start writing stories about their local communities. So it's open to grades 8 and 11, to 11, and they write about, they research about unsung heroes and heroines in their communities, and we provide things for them if they want to. This year's winner, in fact, wrote about the researched about the impact of the 1913 Land Act on his community in the Eastern Cape. We found the benefit to be that, in fact, universities have reported a slight increase in the number of young people that have taken it, so they do provide bursaries. But also just to give them research skills, they learn research skills. So it's a relatively new program, but it's encouraged at getting young people to be interested in history. Yes, national, it's open to all schools nationally.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add some information to what Mr. Mwede raised about the information around multi-grade schools, and just to refer for the accurate details for that period to the numbers, to the DBE website and the EMIS, the school realities report, which was loaded on in September 2013. We'll refer to the numbers that I think it was Honourable Mwede to ask the question about the number of the EMIS.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Mr. Mada also has that breakdown for you. We can make that available. If, also, that is a very detailed report as well. But I think your question is specific. We can give you that table per province. I think the only question we've not answered was the first two questions from the Honorable de Villiers, which we didn't understand, and we're trying to locate in the presentation or in the report. If you could just clarify that on the 140 teaching, the advertisement of teaching posts and the 140 and the 49% and the 51.
Well,
one
of the
business
is still the
typical
for that question.
Yeah.
Program.
Yeah. again, sorry.
I'm going to request that because you indicated that you've got other questions, then you can pose those questions while we I'm giving you a platform.
Gymnastics, you give us the information what actually consists this physical education now? Right? And then my last one, Honourable Chairperson, the AG's report says that the ACD accrual for 2011 and 2012, there's actually an incorrect data of that. And if that is so, what is the reason why the AG is saying that? It is incorrect. Can you just get that? Thank you very much.
Yes, our session should be one that members, it's like they don't want to engage, maybe towards the end of the year. And Honorable Rancho. Chairperson, there are a lot of things that are happening outside. That is why we are sort of not sure. Chairperson, I just want to add on what Honorable de Villiers has raised in the issue of the lead teacher. I understand the remuneration. I also wanted to check with the fact that that teacher will be relocated from his or her original place. Then that teacher will go to from Beaufort West to Old Torrens. He or she does not have a place to stay in Old Torrens, and yet his job or her job has to be done within a year, in a period of a year. What is going to happen? Because that teacher is helping the department with his or her skills that he has attained while he was doing something on her own or on his own. And also, yeah, the incentive that comes with the fact that he or she is relocating from her original base. I've got also, Chairperson, a general question that has just come into my mind. I was just thinking, I did not get this report in time. I just wanted to check, man, whenever I've come across a teacher coming from a rural town, because I stay in a rural town, not in a rural village. I don't know what is happening in the village. If a rural teacher says when it's time for caps, and she, the Department of Education, the district will call all of them to come in and present their files in front, and he said, oh, no, I'm not going to school this week because there's this caps thing that I do not understand. Do you think you have done enough as a department for the teachers to understand, or maybe it's their response, it's their negative response towards this this caps issue? Because you'll find that they are doing their files and everything, they neglect the children. For the whole week, if next week the district department will come to visit them, the whole week, this week, they are doing their files and everything and everything. The children will just roam around the classes, and that's a waste of time towards the children. Do you think it's enough? I know maybe it's an ongoing process, but do you think it's getting in to the teachers so as to absorb what really caps is, what is the meaning of this caps program? Thanks, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Rancho. I think what you captured around the issue of caps, this is the reality on the ground. Maybe the difference is between you and us is that we've got more time to interact, and people will ask you, you know, you are sitting in the State Committee on Education, and start to raise their frustrations around the issue of caps. This is the reality that is happening on the ground. But my next question, actually my question will be around, I know all the departments, you know, they're saying that they can't reach the target of 2%, you know,
know, to employ people with disabilities. But one would want to know, as this department, what progress or what are your plans to reach this target? Because most of all the departments can't reach this target. Also, around the issue of the leaves, there was a time where there was an outcry that teachers are always not at school because of ill health and all that. And some of the issues that were raised, it was related to the workload that put stress on them. Are there any programs maybe to assist, you know, teachers to reduce this number of absences at school? DDG, there was a time when the minister was talking about, I don't know how do we call that, but the reality is that clocking system for teachers, how far is the department with that program? And also, maybe I should, this is my personal opinion, because the reality when we interact with principals at schools, they will raise their frustrations around teachers. The teachers will come to school because there's a call that teachers should not be in the staff room. Now what they do, they go into the classroom, sitting there doing nothing. They can, you know, my argument is simple. They can clock in the morning, go into the school, doing nothing. How do we ensure that during that time we get the necessary output? Because for me, reporting at work, it's like coming to work 7 o'clock before other employers, and then sit there doing nothing, waiting for four or five to knock off. How do we ensure that even if we use that clocking system, but because what we need is the quality, you know, the output, how are you going to monitor that we get the necessary output? The last one is around the performance of the provinces. This is a worrying factor. If you take the performance of the provinces, there are provinces that for 3 years they've yet qualified audit reports, but you don't get, you know, where the department, national department, you know, how do you assist, or do you wait till that time that now you will come and say we put these provinces under administration? Because really, you talk about KZN, North West, Northern Cape, you know, but one doesn't get what is that you are doing as this department to assist those provinces. Can one maybe, I think,
I think we'll start, let Mr. Mueli start, and then we'll take Mr. Schumann.
Thank you, Acting DG, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Let me venture into the Chair's question about how do we ensure that outputs are achieved in the system in terms of teaching and learning. We have developed what we call a curriculum monitoring tool, which is populated by the principal together with the school management team. It covers the topics that are covered by teachers, and it links the covering of topics to the assessment tasks to learners. We got the instrument. It was started by KZN. We modified it and gave it national features. It has now been reappropriated into the system. It is being implemented for 2 years, and that's how we are monitoring performance in the classroom. We also link it to the three P's: teacher, text, and time on task. Now, the last one is the one that we are measuring by way of checking curriculum coverage. So we do that, but apart from that, the meetings that have been referred to, quarterly meetings with district officials, they present reports. We also present reports of our own external monitoring through IQMS, but also through other NGOs like JECT and others that we commission to sample schools to get in and check to verify the reports that they are giving us. But IQMS is actually our main source of verifying what is happening in the classroom and even in schools. And I think through the permission of the acting DG, if you see what comes from those reports, the improvement that we have made in terms of curriculum coverage, it's simply because we monitor. We subscribe to the notion that says you cannot expect what you do not inspect, but we do it through democratic means. Then the question raised by Honorable Rantu, the issue around CAPS, acting DG, I don't want to get into the same trouble that I got into with the Portfolio Committee for Education and say maybe we need a session around CAPS. I don't want to say that. CAPS is the strengthening of the existing curriculum to specify the content of what is to be covered per phase, per grade, and to pace so that it makes it easy for monitoring.
But how do you ensure that the people on the ground understand that?
I'm coming to that, Honorable Member. So I just want to dispel the notion of a CAPS week. The truth is, historically, our schools were not used to be monitored, particularly your lower grades. Our focus has, in the main, been grade 12. The other grades were lost from the radar. We started focusing on them, and that's why you'd find that foot soldiers such as subject advisors, and even circuit managers, district directors have to account to the minister on a quarterly basis. So what would they account on if there's no monitoring, if there's no data that they have assembled from monitoring? And I think increasingly the system will get used to that. But the truth is that our system has not been monitored for many years. And we've started to do that. That's why the results are improving. The results are showing that with your improvement, with your monitoring, performance is really improving. But I agree, I was of the view that with the implementation of CAPS, we've reduced administration. The number of even projects that are to be given to learners, the number of files. Teachers used to have up to 5 files. We've reduced them. All that they need to have is only 1 file. So the administration burden has been reduced. But we'll keep paying attention to that, because what you are saying to us is very important. Remunerative and incentives for lead teachers or senior teachers. To the best of my recollection is that senior teachers are remunerated much more than just your ordinary post level 1 teachers. But maybe incentives could relate to relocating them, as redeploying them. In that respect, I think Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and DG, maybe it would vary from one province to the other, and maybe what we could do could be to check with provinces as to how we are dealing with that and to ensure uniformity in terms of incentivizing redeployment. But I also know that the PEM document provides for other incentives such as honorarium, which could be used by provinces. When I was in the province, I used to use that as well, which is an incentive that can be made available to all employees in the system, including teachers. Physical education. There are two aspects to this. There is physical education as it relates to the curriculum, and there is physical education as it relates to curriculum enrichment program, which we call school sports. And it could involve even other recreative activities. This is in the curriculum. This is located under life skills and life orientation. Life skills and life orientation. Now you've got the curriculum enrichment program of it, which is about supporting the implementation of the curriculum, which is about the real playing and training for different sporting codes. And of course, education is responsible for mass participation. And then beyond that, it would be competitive sports. From a curriculum point of view, we don't seem to have many challenges. From a curriculum enrichment point of view, Mrs. Ndebele is here. She can speak because that falls under a branch. But what I know is that the system has improved. The level of participation of learners has increased. But I think if acting DG can allow her, she can say more about that. And then the last one, I've covered that from Honorable De Villiers, of senior teacher redeployment of the lead teacher and remuneration and incentives. I said they should be getting more salaries than your ordinary post level one, but maybe incentives could be about relocating them. It's an inconvenience, so they need more. They have to acquire new accommodation. We'll look at what provinces are doing and try to make it uniform. Thank you, Acting DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair and members.
Just to add on the school enrichment, Mr. Mwele has indicated that the PE is covered within the curriculum. I think the issue of teacher development is an issue, continuous teaching for PE. And we looking at using the teacher institutes that are being identified by the teacher education unit. In terms of the broader sport, that our cooperation with the Department of Sport is beginning to reap benefits. Whilst we're having quite a number of schools that are taking part in sport, we are challenged with issues of infrastructure for some of the codes and equipment. But the Department of Sport has been able to secure some funding to start in dealing with that backlog in terms of the sporting facilities. The members would know that in terms of the new schools that we're building, we've made we catered for the different sporting codes. So the issues of infrastructure and equipment are an issue, but the Department of Sport, as I've indicated, has got a conditional grant that deals with supporting us in terms of provision of that.
Thanks, Acting DG. Honorable Chair, the question around the assistance to provinces on the audit reports. The department has a directorate that assists provinces around that, especially on the administrative part, that is finances, logistical services, asset management, as well as HR matters. Most of the provinces, if Honorable Chair looks at the audit reports, is around assets. There are also a subcommittee of HEDCOM, where these meetings are held, and there's also visits to provinces that takes place 4 times a year. I think we're starting to get success. The two provinces that I want to mention is first of all the Eastern Cape that received a disclaimer in the previous year. They've moved up to a qualified audit report for the last financial year, as well as the Western Cape that were qualified the previous year and then they were unqualified in the last. But the department is really taking, it's also this, these discussions are also taking place at CEM, where the MECs and the minister meet, and it's really a thing that is looked into. The question around the accruals, the CFO can come in, but Honorable De Villiers, the ICD unit consists of specialists, normally engineers, QSs, architects, those kinds of things. The department, when we took on this project, the department was not well geared for that, especially the building. It was taken away from PWD, as you all know, and there's huge amounts of money involved into it. So what we did is we employed people not on a temporary basis, but we employed agents that assist us in these projects.
So we're actually doing the project management from the department side, but the implementing agents are building the schools and things like that. So the chain to get the information is quite long. Now, when the AG audited this, quite a number of these issues were with the implementing agents, especially the accruals. Information had to be gathered from the implementing agents. Now, we as a department then, information that we received from the implementing agents, reported that there were 100 million of accruals, and that is what we reported. Now, if you go to some of the other departments, it's actually a drop in the bucket. The AG then said they could not place emphasis on the information that we received from the implementing agents. We then gathered a team of specialists and reworked this whole thing. Went to the implementing agents and got the info. So we then raised the accruals from just over 100 million to 140 million. And we then reported that. But the AG gave us time to fix that up. The AG then agreed on that, but said they will still just report on it in their report. So that is the reason. So it's just a report, but they're happy with the 140 million. We're not leaving that. We've put now measures in place to assist this ACD unit, as well as the implementing agents, to sort all these things out, that there's controls in place and all those things, that by the next audit there won't be any hiccup around that. Either the CFO can come in, but that is what has happened. Thank you very much.
Okay, I think the 2% disability.
Sorry, Acting DG. Yes, it is a bit of an issue at the moment, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. The 2% was achieved by the former Department of Education. But after that, the split between the split of the former department into higher education and to basic education, I think neither of the two departments could get to the 2%. What we do at the moment to try and assist in that. In all our advertisements, we specify that people with disability are very welcome to, that the department are very welcome to apply for these positions. So in all posts that we advertise, it is in there. Unfortunately, we don't receive a lot of applications from people with disabilities. Our building, to go there, I think it's fully... I don't know what the right word is, but it complied to people with disabilities, but the department is trying its utmost best to get to the 2%. It is a bit difficult.
Okay, Chair, let me just take the remaining of the questions, and let me just start with the one on the 2% disability. I think this is also an issue that, in terms of the reporting for the MPAT, for the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation, it's also a critical area. I think that's where we're applying our mind, and I think when we come to the end of this financial year, I think I don't want to go into the details of what how we improve on this, but I'm confident that the 2% could be attained. But it's just not about the 2%. It's about making sure the people you have are also gainfully employed, as well as benefits of systems. So I think that's something we will be looking at working on. And then to go to the question of the Honourable de Villiers on the underspending in infrastructure and how is the program being addressed. Basically, Mr. Schoeman addressed the issue related to the accounting aspect of the program. In terms of the program itself, we have basically in March, we had projects to the value of 2.5 billion that were committed, and in fact, as at the end of September, it was 6 billion rands of projects, which is covering over 250 schools, new schools that will replace the mud, as well as over 1,000 projects for basic water, sanitation, and electricity. Now, what occurs is that in order to get paid, you got to show progress, and as a department, there are lessons from the past where contractors or implementing agents or companies were paid this money and they were gone and there was no facility at the end of the day. We do not follow that approach, and basically if you do not have the progress, we don't have the physical proof, there is no payment. In fact, if the progress had been such of a nature, we should have actually been on the issue of dealing with overspending, which could run even higher than the underspending we projected. But in that, we highlight in the report various factors that also slow down progress in terms of contractors being terminated and liquidated, as well as the weather and other issues. So this is something we are addressing with in discussion with Treasury, National Treasury, as to how that we manage the cash flow, as well as what the budget should be provided for that, as well as with the PICC, working on how we could actually speed up or ensure that the progress in the building is appropriate in terms of what we're expecting in terms of delivery. And then we've also added to that unit that we are talking about on the CD, in addition to people to assist on the financial side, to have people to assist us to be out working with the agents as well as contractors in order to ensure that they have the capacity to deliver. But it's something that's not unique to basic education, because there are other government projects as well which the manner of behavior of the construction industry is similar. So that's been the difficulty in addressing that. So the underspending could have been a matter where we could have been reckless and just handed out the money to people and then said that we spent. But I think that would have been negligent of us, because we would not have received anything in return that we could substantiate. So on that basis, what we owe is more than what we have even in our budget. So the program hasn't been cut back. Basically, we even adding on to it based on the advice of the PICC to ensure that there is parallel programs running depending on which ones could be done, including looking at alternative building technologies to assist to speed up the program. I think on the lead, the minister did indicate the issue of looking at a system. In fact, the Western Cape and I think one other province that is looking at is already looking at implementing a system like that. But we have a team which is also including provincial departments to come up with a proposal for the national uniform system. That we are still awaiting that report, and when we do get that information, we can communicate what is the decision of the minister and the CM in that regard. But that is also on the cards. But I think Mr. Mueli touched on the issue of that is just would look at the attendance, but as the chair alluded to, that you could still go in the classroom and you still wouldn't be doing what is expected of you. But I think to touch on those points, I think these meetings that we reported that the minister has with district directors has set the tone that there is basically nowhere to hide. So the district directors, as well as other officials, including those from DBE on the monitoring and covering, dealing with curriculum coverage, is assisting us in that regard to uncover those that are not doing what they're supposed to. You'll find that when we release the next ANA results, there again, there's exposure in terms of those areas where there's underperformance. And some of that underperformance you will find is due to the fact not that our learners are not good enough to pass these tests, they just haven't been taught in the classroom. But basically, we're talking of two types of teachers here. And I think, as you alluded, that some of you would be back, but also from our side, some of us may not be back in the next term. But I think the next term, even before the next term, there would be this issue of accountability that will dominate over the next few years. And in this two teachers we're talking about is, you do have the teacher who wants to teach, and even with the training we offer, maybe they need a bit more time and support in order to grasp what we're expecting of them. I think we do not have a problem with that. It's just that we need to ensure that we understand what their requirements are and put the necessary measures in place. But then on the other hand, there are those, irrespective of what we try to do, are not going to change. And no, it's not even untrainable, because there are people that want to be trained, and if they're untrainable, it's not like they are not trying to they're not supportive to do that, but there are others who basically will not want to change and will just are there just for their salary or to beat the system, and that I think we'll have to address in a different manner, and maybe we should not be looking at putting our efforts into trying to change them if they're not going to do that, because I think both the from the side of the department as well as the individual teacher, they need to meet each other. So I think that's the one going forward that we will be probably discussing with the various committees. I think on the performance audits, it's been highlighted that the Eastern Cape basically it's had a disclaimer over many years, and then they've moved out of this. And part of this process is that even Mpumalanga had been assisted I think into the third straight year of unqualified. But prior to that, again, this mechanism of our monitoring over four quarters, as well as going into provinces where they need assistance whenever they need it. And this process is not just a DBE one, because that team is not just that unit. It comprises other units across the DBE that makes it up, as well as National Treasury, who also joins in. So it's tripartite together with the Provincial Education Department.
Thank you, Acting Chief Chief Chief. Honorable members, you are fine?
Yes,
let me hear, because I, honorable.
Yeah, maybe it's a question, but actually a concern. Are you saying, to you, 107, that the buildings are now handling by DBE and not public? That's my for us.
Okay, for the committee, basically public works is national as well as in provincial departments. They have provincial public works departments and roads. Their provincial departments basically do give them work to do. In the Western Cape, the equivalent public works department is the sole implementing agent for the Western Cape Education Department. So they're not, we ourselves have also given the National Department Public Works now to deal with alternative technology as well. But we have some cautions as to how to work. But we have been given a budget in terms of the backlogged infrastructure grant to deal with the inappropriate schools. So we have various agents, let me just put it this way, because this was a debate 3 years ago, that public works is not the sole implementing agent for the DBE. We have used others, and in fact at the time we were not allowed to use them because of their track record, but because it's another department that in reality they should be dealing with it. But over the years their performance has not been effective. That is why we have gone done our own. We've been entrusted with that. If over time public work shows an improvement, then we'll probably go back to our core business.
Chairperson, mine is it's on the issue of, I just want to comment on the issue of those schools that were behind with everything during the strikes of the of the communities. I don't know, maybe you have raised, or you have somebody did go into details on how the department is going to deal with those things, because I was not here. I don't want to delay the meeting. Also, Chairperson, the issue of management of those files that Ms. Emweli was talking about, because the teachers are moved away from 5 or 7 files. They are using one file, but the management is the problem of that one file that they have. Also, Chairperson, the other comment is on the issue of the grade R teachers that wants to be remunerated like other teachers, those that are at level 4. When we had our PEC Lukhutla, they went there as a group of concerned grade R teachers, pursuing the issue of them to get is the salary of the same salary of a grade one, because they mentioned the grade one teachers, the same salary as the grade one teachers. I just wanted to check if the department has a program of looking to those issues, or did the is the department aware that the grade R teachers want to be remunerated like the grade one teachers? In the issue, chairperson, of the department trying to work towards getting the 2% in the department of disabled, what is not disability, of the people with disability. The issue of schools with children with disability, and our schools are still, Faba, don't talk when I'm talking because I'm a teacher. They usually, people listen to what I'm saying. The issue of our schools are, the structure of our schools are still the schools that we had in the past, era of apartheid, where you have these different levels of schools, and they were not conducive for a child who is in a wheelchair. Now my point is, when I was in Jamestown teaching at Pahameng, we had two disabled children that if our grade 5 and grade 6 was on top of on the second level, then if a teacher has to deal with those children, and they were very brilliant children, you just did not want to miss them in the classroom. If we want to deal with them, we'll have to ask the other children, the others must lift that child up to the level of the classroom, and the others will bring the wheelchair with them. So I still see that, because that school does not have any, there is no change in that school, which means those children are still doing the same thing that I left 5 years or ago. So that was happening in 5 years ago. It's still happening until now. As a result, chairperson, some of them, they ended up going to that NGO that is giving just food. It doesn't have any education things that are happening in that facility. It's just to see for those disabled or, yeah, you call it disabled, okay? People with disability who are getting food and getting just care during the day. What is the department thinking about those issues? Do you have a program on that? If you have a program, can you share the program with us? Not now, maybe some other time. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Ranto. Yes, you have raised a very important issue. I think this question struck something in my mind. The school for the blind in the Northwest. The issue around safety. The issue around safety for these people with disabilities. And also, I think we haven't had anything around the programs, because every day, you know what's happening in schools, parents are not even free to, you know, when kids go to school, you are not sure whether your child is going to come back, but one didn't really pick it up, that, because to me it's an issue, we cannot just ignore that, safety at school.
If you want to touch on that, Google will follow.
No, thank you, Acting DG. Chair, it shows that the DG knows the department. The safety issue has been deflected to colleague Gugu, so she'll deal with it. So the issue that has been raised by Honorable Chair will be responded to by colleague Gugu Ndebele. Honorable Ranto has raised about four issues.
looks like today I was really, I made a mistake by sitting opposite the chair. I'll be careful next time. Well, the management of files is an issue that we'll continue to engage with. The truth, Chairperson, is that the caps came as a result of the outcry, responding to the outcry and the issues raised by teachers in particular in 2009. And teachers said, attend to these things, reduce the 5 to 1 file, and make it easy for us to teach so that we don't have to battle with working on what has to be taught, textbooks. You know, the approach to OBE says that teachers are fully equipped to look for materials, you know, to plan their teaching and so on. It has proven not to have worked, and that's why we introduced CAPS. So all that I'm saying, Chairperson, is that we'll continue to work with challenges around managing the one file that we have reduced from 5. And by the way, teachers have not been fully trained. They were just, they received orientation. Yeah, they received orientation. So ongoing training will continue. And I'm very, very optimistic, like many South Africans, that increasingly they'll get to love this file. As I've heard from some of the teachers, even across the length and breadth of this country, that they welcome CAPS. The results also indicate that teachers welcome the implementation of CAPS. Foundation faced improvement last year, and we're looking forward to further improvement even this year. And I know that the DG is looking at me. He wouldn't like me to say that. Areas of service delivery protest, Sterkspruit in particular. Yeah, I come from Sterkspruit, that's why I instead of Sterkspruit, I said Sterkspruit. Well, we've been working with the province. The province has assured us that they've developed a recovery plan for Sterkspruit, and they've even succeeded in securing a conducive environment for learners to study and pass their end of the year exams. The head of the department in particular phoned me to update me about 3 weeks ago to say that they are well on track with their straight. They have met with various stakeholders. They have agreed that learners must be protected, and communities must afford learners and a conducive environment for them to prepare for exam and even pass. We are aware that that area has experienced disturbances almost throughout the year. It's a pity that we couldn't do what Gauteng is doing with Bekkersdal, which is what they've learned from the northwest with the Taung camp. But the HOD has assured me that they have attended to Sterkspruit. We're also working with the province to make sure that, similar to what happened at Oliphant's Hoek in the Northern Cape, the lower grades, we have a program that is supporting them, which will continue even next year if many of them are not going to make it, to ensure that it will not have spillover effects to grade 12. Grade R practitioners, it comes a long way in the sector. The brief answer, because I don't want to be long on this one, we remain seized with it, but the bottom line is that the policy is very clear. If you don't have REQV13, you cannot be remunerated like fully qualified teachers. REQV13 is the latest M plus 3 or even M plus 4, metric plus 3 years of teacher qualifications. Those who come a long way would even have maybe say REQV12, which was acceptable. But now what we are doing is that we have a very comprehensive HRP strategy to develop these teachers who do not meet the minimum requirements of the policy to bring them on par. Many of them have started to meet the requirements, and they get absorbed in the system so that they get the benefits that all others are getting.
It's a long way, but I can assure this committee is not as long as a long walk to freedom. And then the issue of compliance with buildings, the new buildings that you are putting up, the norms are very clear. The acting DG can explain even more on that one, to make sure that all the new buildings that you are putting up should be fully compliant, have rails, so that learners with physical disabilities are able to enjoy, you know, using the facilities of the school like all others. But in the interim, unfortunately, it will have to depend on the planning of the school, working with the district and us, to make sure that those classes that are accessible, priority should be given to learners who cannot access the rest of the building. I think that's what I can. We acknowledge that it is an area that we have not done much in, especially in making sure that all our buildings comply with norms of accessibility for learners with disability, the reality that we accept. Maybe in conclusion, Acting DG and Honorable Chair and members, Honorable Ranto asked as to whether do we have a program for learners with disability. Again, it's an engagement for another day. We can present to you to show you how each and every province is catering for different disabilities and what progress have we made, the numbers that we have in terms of learners who are not in our schooling system, how we have increased the number of learners with disability to be part of our schooling system, and how they are even progressing in the system. So that presentation we made to the Portfolio Committee for Education, if this committee is of the view that we do the same, I think we'll be guided by the committee and the acting DG, then we'll prepare and make the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. You've actually identified a very serious problem of school safety. And part of the complication, I think, as you've indicated, is that it's both external and internal. So it's the safety of children as they go to school, but also within schools, because that's the phenomenon that we're seeing now. And so the strategies which were focused primarily on ensuring that we have fences, the physical infrastructure, we have to improve on them now to look at what do we do in relation to the safety in the schools. We do have, as members would know, legislation and regulations around searches, etc., etc., and it's not utilized as well as it could, so we need to work with principals in utilizing that. And provinces also have, we've had a very successful program now of linking schools to police stations, primarily to at least assure the schools that there is someone that they contact in the police station who can come and assist. The challenge that we've seen in some of the areas, for instance, in Orange Farm, the police station is about 50 km away from the school. So a lot of damage could have happened before the help arrived. SEPS has agreed to look at satellite police stations nearer to the schools that are in high-risk areas. We're looking at working with EPWP at safety officers in schools. The other challenge is that some of the problems that are in the communities, like the gangs that we see now, again, impact on, you know, those battles are brought into the school. So even those safety officers necessarily themselves are not safe. We're looking to add to that the access of young people to cell phones, for instance, has increased cyberbullying. So some of the violence that young people are experiencing is not necessarily physical violence, but it's psychosocial, psychological violence. So we're looking at a number of strategies, but I have to be honest, Honorable Chair, it is a moving target because the nature of the violence and of the crime changes. And so the strategy of identifying high-risk areas doesn't necessarily work because some of the problems that we've seen now are in schools that you wouldn't think would have those kinds of problems. And so with ourselves, SEPS, and social development, we need to sit down and say, how do we support those learners? The violent ones, we see that some of them have got issues at home, they've got discipline issues, so there needs to be programs to support them. This morning, the MEC for Gauteng launched, was talking about the crime line, because a lot of the kids, even though they know that the people give guns in schools, they don't want to report because they fear a reprisal. So that facilities is to encourage young people to report. But maybe we need to come back once we've worked on our program with SEF to see how we can look at an improved program.
The sooner you attend to that program.
Because this is the last bend closed. We're talking mainly about the crime and security and so on and so on, but there are other issues around safety. The issue of children who fell into a swimming pool. Those are some of the issues that because one time when we were in Busile School for the Blind, there was some work that was done somewhere where they left. You know, there are a lot of blind children there, but then there were excavations that were done there and so on. So I think it's just something that I believe needs to be given attention.
Acting DG, I think like Honorable Magunyan is saying, you know, for example, this is why I was talking about the School for the Blind in the North West, where we had 3 years back incident where 3 learners burnt to death. Recently, the learner who drowned in the pool. It says, what are we doing? You know, I think generally it's around the issue of safety. How do we handle that? But also it means it's one of the issues that really as department will have to look into that very seriously. Because we cannot allow a situation where every time these incidents are happening and nothing is done about it. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to thank the department, honorable members, for this year. This is our last meeting with the department. And acting DG, I think Honorable De Villiers raised a question, but he was very, like, he didn't want to come openly around the issue of, I could, you know, sense that he was not comfortable around teachers being trained by unions and all that, you know, because it's just that he was not very open, because the reality is that if we don't have programs, you know, any union will have its own agenda of what that union wants to achieve. I think he was very, like, very diplomatic, but I think it's very important that we get clarity, because these are unions. If you say unions must teach, train teachers, on what? You know, is there any guidance? Because I think he was not free to say, like I'm saying it, that, like, for example, they will have his own agenda, the professor will have statue and all that. Yes, he wanted clarity around that. Can we, maybe so that when he leaves this meeting,
yeah, I think let me just assist with this one. Basically, this is a memorandum of agreement with teacher unions, and in some international countries there are unions that basically carry out teacher development activities. But what we want to say clearly is that the training is based on what the department wants, and if I may want to simplify it, the trade unions are basically a service provider to the department, in that we could have either used our own provincial officials to do that or gone out on tender as well. But as part of the cooperation and building, the unions have to meet the guidelines, the the terms that we would want in terms of covering the training. And as Mr. Mueli indicated, the 70 million that we're talking about was to do CAPS training, which the department would have to do by itself or someone else. Then there is a monitoring of that program, as well as to see whether it basically meets the standards the department would want. The other is the unions would have to comply with everything that the PMFA would require to give their receipts, their records, the reports, and so forth. And that is also auditable as well. So I think that is the manner in which we are working with the teacher unions in terms of this collaboration. It is not something where they come and they say, I want to do 1, 2, 3, and we just give money over. It's money that we would have utilized elsewhere. If they cannot provide that service, we have to go and find someone else or do it by ourselves.
Just 1 minute. We also train those who are going to train in unions. They form part of the training core team that we train, including universities. And the acting DG mentioned, you see, that's the mistake that we made in South Africa. We focused on labor relations and at the expense of professional development. Countries that have moved, they have brought in this leg of professional development, getting unions to be part of training. Some of the union officials are seconded full-time. Denmark, Netherlands, Norway, they do that. And you look at their education system, how it's performing. It's one of the best in the world. Thanks.
Thank you for that explanation, because I'm not going to allow for any other, because I wanted Honorable Davila that when we leave, I don't want to say when you leave this, when we leave this, we should be on the same path, you know, because we shouldn't have our own interpretation of this.
When you retire, I mean, I will just go into that situation with one of the members of the
on the honorable members and the department. Thank you. And honorable members, I'm going to request that when the department leaves, just stay behind for 5 minutes.
When I was visiting about the library, we are seeing the situation with a library. We built them a library. It was in line with the guidelines of the department.
But now, for the community, now.
Yeah, no. That's the problem. And that is the problem, because if you live in Peter, computers in there and so on. Now I have to run around trying to get people to donate books and so on.
Get in touch with Mr. Mahaga. He's giving me a visit at
Mahaga.
This one.
And there was a little bit of an